you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Donut Racing Show, where we bring a firm handshake mindset to the double cheek kissing podium of Formula One racing. It's just a different culture over there in Europe. That's how they do things. Okay, my name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined by my two co-hosts, my favorite auto journalists and authors, Elizabeth Blackstock.
Good morning.
And Alanis King.
Hi. Today, we are breaking down the story that rocked Formula One last week. AlphaTauri's dismissal of Dutchman Nyck de Vries and the return of everyone's favorite Aussie, Daniel Ricciardo.
This story sent shockwaves through the F1 world, and we decided this would be a great time to actually take a look at Red Bull's junior team and see if AlphaTauri's decision to fire de Vries was truly justified. We won't spoil our opinion right up top, but let's just say the numbers tell a really fascinating story.
But first, how is everybody doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I'm actually really looking forward to this episode. I feel like De Vries has been fully swept out of the news in the past week. It's now the Daniel Ricciardo show over in F1. No mention of Nyck de Vries. So I'm really looking forward to this whole episode.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. What I've seen online is when you see AlphaTauri post something on Twitter, there are a lot of replies that are like, "You erased Nyck. You haven't even said goodbye to Nyck. What's going on?" It's fascinating. There's a lot going on here, but we'll get to that later. Elizabeth, how have you been?
I've been great. I did a lot of cooking this weekend for Grand Prix Gastronomy and realized I didn't actually save any of my videos for that. So I get to cook again.
I mean, that's not the worst thing in the world, I guess.
No, it was a good one. It came out great. I made risotto for Monza. And I still got time to do it again, but good Lord, an hour and a half process, it all just gone.
Oh, that's rough.
I mean, you can send some risotto my way. I would love that. I love risotto. Yeah.
I'll ship it over. No big deal.
Yeah, I'm sure it keeps in the mail. Just put it in a cardboard box.
I spent the weekend driving a Porsche 911 GT3 RS.
Pretty good weekend.
Yeah, that's a good car. That's about all I got there. That is a really, really, really good car.
And that's the type of automotive insights we bring to your ears. Let's get into this. Buckle up. We're about to learn about the Red Bull Junior program in depth.
And that means we get to start out with some context about what this program actually even is. Basically, it's a way for Red Bull to seek out and invest in young talented drivers, which is really similar to the way that Red Bull partners with talented athletes generally around the whole world. The main goal is to get drivers into F1, and then if that doesn't work out, they'll settle for another form of top-level racing.
The team we know today as AlphaTauri began in 2006 as Toro Rosso. 2 years prior, Red Bull energy drink owner Dietrich Mateschitz bought the flailing Jaguar Formula One team, brought in a new crew, and renamed it Red Bull Racing. The driver stable consisted of veteran Brit David Coulthard as the number one driver, with Austrian Christian Klein and Italian Tonio Liuzzi switching off in the second car during the 2005 season. But having two drivers switch off like that was kind of weird, and Tonio actually stepped away from the team as a result because neither driver was getting that much experience behind the wheel with that arrangement.
According to Tonio Liuzzi, Dietrich told him, "Don't worry, we really believe you can be our future and we don't want to stop your growth, so just wait one more year. We are planning to buy another team, an Italian team, and I would like to make you as a first driver with a fully Italian brand. It will be called Toro Rosso."
Similar to how Red Bull bought Jaguar, Toro Rosso would be built on a somewhat janky foundation of the former Minardi Formula One team. Toro Rosso paired Liuzzi with American and appropriately named driver Scott Speed. In the team's first season, Toro Rosso finished 9th out of 11 constructors, which is not a terrible start for a brand new junior team from a fledgling organization. 17 years later, nearly 20 drivers have raced for Toro Rosso / AlphaTauri, including Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen, setting Red Bull's expectations for drivers in their junior programs really, really, really high.
Yeah, they basically want to find the next Vettel, the next Verstappen.
Yeah, and it gets really intense in the whole Red Bull ladder because of that.
Yes, which brings us into our main topic today. Nyck de Vries and his shock termination. Guys, when I woke up last Tuesday morning and saw that news on my social feeds, I wasn't in shock, but I was very surprised. His performance wasn't great this season, as we'll see. But I didn't think that it was bad enough to kind of warrant firing 10 races after the season began. And I wasn't alone in that. I saw a lot of sympathy online for Nyck. Saw a lot of people questioning Red Bull's decision. A lot of fervor in the comments.
Well, I think this is a very interesting situation because every time we see a Red Bull mid-season shakeup, you could have seen it coming, but you weren't like directly predicting it the whole time. Mm-hmm. So I think for much of this season, we have been looking at Max Verstappen versus Sergio Perez because they are in the dominant car. And Checo has had some good results, but he's also had some very surprisingly bad results. So when we look at the Daniel Ricciardo looming in the background, we're kind of looking at Checo. With the AlphaTauri team, that car has been so bad that I don't think a lot of us saw this coming.
Yeah, I think every time we mention Nyck de Vries and his bad luck on the show, we're just kind of like, well, you know, he's a rookie and he's in a pretty bad car, so we can chalk it up to that. He'll be good. He'll be better next season. So that's why it was like so shocking to me that this happened in the first place.
And hopes were really high for Nyck coming into Formula One. If you weren't familiar with who he was before he got into the sport, he was actually champion in both the Formula Renault Alps and the EuroCup Formula Renault Series in 2014. De Vries followed that up with a Formula 2 championship in 2019, and he also won the 2020 to 2021 Formula E championship driving for the Mercedes EQ team. His three-season run for Mercedes put him into the Toto Wolff sphere of influence, and so Nyck was seen a lot in the garage at F1 races throughout 2021 before he officially became a reserve driver for Merck in 2022.
And Nick's chance to impress the world came last year when he subbed in for Alex Albon, who was having some health issues. It was his appendix, right, mm-hmm. last year?
His appendix, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he had his appendix issues, and he got to get in a Williams at Monza. And he was super, super impressive. In his debut F1 race, Nyck de Vries managed a 9th place points finish, which blew everyone's mind. Like, this is a Williams car. That's hard to do, especially when you have not been in a Formula One race before. Despite the impressive resume, there wasn't room at Mercedes or Williams for de Vries to actually get on the grid the next season. So he signed with AlphaTauri for 2023. unfortunately, he would soon learn that his resume came with some big expectations at AlphaTauri.
Yeah, so I think that's something that people didn't really realize just by looking at him. He's almost 30 years old. He's 28 years old.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks like a baby, but he's 28.
He's 28. He's got a lot of experience. So I think that will factor into Red Bull / AlphaTauri's decision. You know, it's not like he's just a little baby guy. He's a man guy. He's a guy. He's got a young face, but he's got a lot of experience. So that's why expectations were so high.
And as we know, his 2023 season has been pretty poor. De Vries and Logan Sargeant are the only drivers who currently have 0 points after 10 races. That's a pretty disappointing stat in its own right, especially considering that Nick came out there last year in one race and immediately scored points, right?
Yeah.
AlphaTauri is currently sitting at the bottom of the constructor standings with 2 points. Both of them have been scored by Yuki Tsunoda with 10th place finishes in Australia and Baku. And De Vries, his best finish so far this season is 12th.
Not great. But guys, we know that stats like that could be misleading without some context. His lack of points doesn't tell the whole story here, okay? After all, Nick De Vries is a rookie in an AlphaTauri, okay? It's not a very good car. His teammate, Yuki Tsunoda, I would say very good driver in his own right. With those only 2 10th place finishes, it just doesn't paint a very good picture of the car.
But this picture we're looking at, it might not be good, but it's also not very big. We've given you a good amount of context, but what we really need to help us decide if Nick's termination was justified is analysis and statistics and something that Nolan has worked hard on.
What inspired the whole episode was my desire to know if Nick De Vries is any worse than every Toro Rosso and AlphaTauri driver using math. I wanted to know scientifically, without a doubt, did he perform any worse? Because it can seem like Red Bull makes these decisions with a lot of politics going on in the background, and they aren't backed up by numbers. So that's what I wanted to know. Can the math back up this decision? And do I, a podcaster and Formula One fan, know more than a multi-million racing operation? So anyway, at first, I just found the average of Nick's finishing positions at the end of every race this year. But the problem was that you can't really account for retirements by simply taking the average, because if you just mark a retirement as a zero, that actually improves his overall average, because a lower number means that you finished higher in the race. So I had to find another solution. So with the help of donut resident physicist Tony Lund, director of the Real Mechanic Stuff videos, he's also a physicist and teaches college kids how to do physics. He actually devised a better formula that made zero undesirable. Okay, so the formula is what we're calling it.
No, I'm calling it Formula N for Formula N. Nolan.
Oh,
yeah, Formula Nolan.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it was N. Formula Nick. Oh, it's Formula Nolan.
It can do
that too.
It can do both. It can, the Nick formula. How about that? Okay, so the Nick formula is pretty simple. It's just addition. It's just adding stuff, but. Instead of inputting the finishing position for the race into the equation, you input how many cars the driver finished in front of for that event, okay? So, for example, Nick finished 14th at Bahrain this year, so he earned a 6 for that race. I did that calculation for the first 10 races, because that's how many races Nick has, added them together, and Nick earned what we'll call a performance rating of 41. Then I did that again for every driver that Toro Rosso and AlphaTauri has ever employed.
Oh, that's a lot.
It was a lot of addition. It felt like I was in third grade again. Lot of just adding. Luckily. I'm trying to learn math better because high school and college was not kind to me in math. So back to the Nick formula here. So every driver was rated on the first 10 races of their first full season, since there were a few drivers who took over midway through a season, like Sebastian Vettel taking Scott's speed spot back in 2007. Unfortunately, guys, the Nick formula does have some blind spots, okay? You can't directly compare drivers from different periods in Formula One, since some seasons have more cars on the grids than others, which inflates or deflates the rating score. For example, Daniel Ricciardo earned a rating of 100 for his 2012 season, more than double that of Nick DeVries, but there were 24 cars on the grid that year, so his rating, if the car was any decent, it's just going to be higher because you basically earn 4 more points by virtue of the car not being in last place. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to what Nick's performance rating can tell us in a bit, but first, the Nick formula produced some pretty interesting findings. So, number one, Toro Rosso drivers Jaime Alguersuari, Daniel Cafiat, and Alex Albon are the only Red Bull Junior drivers to perform better than their more experienced teammate in their first 10 races in their first full season.
Oh, and look how that worked out for Daniel Cafiat.
Exactly.
And Jaime Alguersuari.
Yes. Despite that interesting fact, no junior drivers ever kept that momentum to beat their more experienced teammate in the Drivers' Championship in their first year. I think this has to do with the stamina it takes for a Formula One driver to drive an entire season. 10 events is still 10 events, but I mean, the calendar spread out over the entire year. The race calendar is spread out over the year. There's a lot more events. There's over 20 usually. So that takes a lot of stamina, takes a lot of grit, and more experienced drivers just have that, I think.
No, I can see that. I think that makes a lot of sense. They have you can come out of the gate swinging, but it's all about maintaining that momentum.
Exactly. Exactly. Maybe you're going all out for those first 10 races and you just burn out.
And there are experienced drivers who do that too. Mm-hmm. That is not just younger drivers. Obviously, it's more common with younger drivers, but there are experienced drivers who do that, and that's why they don't win championships.
So, speaking of Jaime Alguersuari, he earned the highest performance rating of all Toro Rosso and AlphaTauri drivers with a performance rating score of 112, but there were 24 cars on the grid for his rookie season, so that score is a bit inflated, but make no mistake, this guy was very good. Liz, tell us more about Alguersuari.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
So Jaime Alguersuari, when he was signed to Toro Rosso for the first year, he became the youngest ever F1 driver at the time. He took actually Sebastian Bourdais' place. Bourdais then moved over to the IndyCar series. And Alguersuari was 19 and took over from a 30-year-old Bourdais, partnered with Sebastian Buemi, because this was an era where everyone was named Sebastian for some reason.
Yeah.
But Alguersuari and Buemi were both cut from Toro Rosso pretty unceremoniously because Helmut Marko said they were, quote, not Grand Prix winners, and that he, quote, didn't see in them any possibility of growth.
That's brutal.
Helmut Marko is just the guy who says all the stuff you don't want to hear. He's so mean.
So wait, we haven't even mentioned who Helmut Marko is. He's the guy who leads the junior program, right? He finds the drivers.
Yes, I think they just gave him a title because he likes to talk a lot of trash.
I believe Helmut Marko's actually been doing some sort of junior program for over 2 decades now. I think he started in the 1990s where he began hunting out talent and then
it became a Red Bull thing after a while. So this guy has been doing this for a while. He was a former race car driver. He raced in F1 in the 1970s before he got an eye injury that made him unable to race anymore. Now he's just kind of taken his lack of a career out on all of his young drivers the same way that dance moms do that to their kids. When Jaime Alguersuari was fired, he, you know, obviously in a big brutal way, Marco says he's not worth anything. Alguersuari went to Formula E for a little while, and he retired from racing entirely at 24 years old.
Wow.
And last year, he gave some context to a Spanish publication, and that was picked up by The Race, who translated it. Basically, Alguersuari said, "I have not been able to erase this. I have done therapy. When I retired, several psychologists helped me. Now, even so, strange things come to my head, and sometimes I wake up crying, having dreamt of having done a great lap, only to see the face of Mr. Marco, angry."
Wow.
Yeah. This is someone who came out of this with a lot of trauma with the way that he was dumped, and especially when we give that context that he was outperforming his more experienced teammate. He went on to mention that, quote, "Red Bull wants to find drivers in the middle of a lake who are not known, neither is their family, their friends, and who depend only on Red Bull," which I think is a very interesting thing, because I believe we're going to talk about it in a bit as well with some other drivers, but that kind of creates a reliance on Red Bull that can destroy a career.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't want to be like codependent with your bosses, I guess.
Yeah, it's not great.
Well, I mean, it's very interesting because you could equate it to a lot of different careers. Like maybe you're a podcaster or a presenter or something, and you only have one real outlet that you are depending on for your career and your life and your passion and your dreams. And the guy, one of the higher up people at this outlet, constantly tells you, you are horrible, you are the worst, it doesn't matter that your stuff performs better than other people's stuff, we hate you, we're gonna fire you. And you've worked your whole life to get here, and this was your like one chance, and you get dropped after being told you're the worst. That's hard.
It is brutal. And especially when you consider, according to the Nick formula that Nolan has so kindly assembled for us, in 2009, Sebastian Bourdais actually earned a higher performance rating than his teammate Sebastian Buemi. So that was 52-47. And despite that higher performance, after only 9 races, he was dropped for Alguersuari. There really wasn't a reason on that one. I'm assuming it's just because he was old. And old in terms of Formula One.
Which, yeah, he's 30. Get him out of there.
Yeah, 30, you're over the hill.
You're dead.
Yeah.
Put you in the grave. Yeah. I thought that was super interesting because I was like, okay. Like, I mean, that was almost 15 years ago, but establishes almost a little bit of a precedent where it's like, hey, even though this guy is performing better, maybe the politics sides do overrule the numbers in that case, which I think you're correct.
This is such a thing for the Red Bull program, because once you're in the Red Bull program, you are at their will. They will do whatever they want with you. They will promote you, then demote you, then kick you out entirely, then bring you back. When Daniel Ricciardo left Red Bull, there was this sense of freedom that now he can go somewhere else and maybe become the number one driver, mm-hmm. and maybe take his career into his own hands, not just be in fear constantly of being demoted. Like we're seeing with Sergio Perez, he is having a streak of not doing very well, but he's done pretty well leading up to this point. Like he hasn't been bad. He has had some really good races. And yet here we are talking about how he is at the whims of Red Bull.
Yeah. And we'll get into Sergio's performance rating a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, that's a guy, again, a pretty good parallel to Nyck de Vries, very experienced driver. I think he won once before coming to Red Bull, but still lots of experience behind the wheel. One of the more veteran drivers of the sport coming over and then having the misfortune of being paired up with one of the best drivers of his generation.
I thought you were going to say Helmut Marko.
Helmut Marko, no. Max Verstappen. All right, so what the Nyck formula is truly useful for, and the whole point of this episode, is comparing teammates, okay? Some Red Bull Junior teammate pairs over the years have very little difference performance rating wise, like Max Verstappen and Carlos Sainz in 2015, with a difference of one after 10 races. Others, though, do a lot better. Oh, by the way, Max would go on to, I think, finish 12th in the championship that year, and Carlos was down to 15th. So the gap grew.
Imagine Max Verstappen in 12th.
I loved watching Max Verstappen in the Toro Rosso. That was like so, those were so much fun. Anyway, other teammates do a lot better. Okay, so the Toro Rosso drivers with the biggest performance rating lead after 10 races in their rookie year are Antonio Liuzzi with a 20-point advantage over Scott Speed that first year of Toro Rosso. Then there is Jaime Alguersuari with a 26-point lead on Sebastian Buemi. And finally, Pierre Gasly with a 31-performance-point leg up on fellow rookie Brendan Hartley. And Hartley was let go after that season. So that was a huge gap. If you were watching back then, you know that Hartley was kind of one of those guys where you're like, oh yeah, there's the entire grid, and then there's Hartley down at the bottom. It does me no pleasure to say that. He actually seems like a really cool guy, but he was having a rough go of it that year.
I mean, I think what's really interesting about seeing this listing is that when you get into motorsport, there are drivers whose names come up in those other forms of motorsports who you will learn before you learn other drivers. Sebastian Buemi is one of those people. And the fact that Jaime Alguersuari was so just like hurt by his time at Red Bull that he had to quit racing. If he were still racing in the top levels, he would probably be a huge name to people entering motorsports and like just getting to know it, because Sebastian Buemi is like, he's a big deal.
That's fair. Yeah.
And he was just so traumatized by Red Bull that he's gone.
Yeah, it's super sad that that's how it worked out. Yeah. So, with the best performing Toro Rosso drivers out of the way, that kind of begs the question, which Toro Rosso and AlphaTauri drivers had the biggest performance rating deficit to their teammate after their first 10 races? So, in 2021, Yuki Tsunoda had a 24 rating point gap to Pierre Gasly. And we all remember how close Yuki came to losing his ride. That was a storyline of one of the Drive to Survive seasons. It was looking like he was going to get the boot. Pretty weak season. Then in 2018, the aforementioned Brendan Hartley fell 31 rating points behind Pierre Gasly and would later use his job. And that brings us to what we've all been waiting for. The whole point of the Nick formula. Drumroll, please. The worst performing Toro Rosso AlphaTauri driver relative to their teammate in the first 10 races of their first full season, according to a formula made up by a guy at Donut, the one and only Nick DeVries.
Ouch.
That's right. Nick, unfortunately, fell 32 performance rating points behind Yuki Tsunoda with a rating of 41 to Yuki's 73. Nick DeVries did worse than Brendan Hartley, so I don't think it should be a surprise that he was let go.
It's especially bad considering how bad that car is and how Yuki has 2 points.
Yes.
It's surprising, I think, when you take a look at it, and I will discuss my own personal feelings about the Red Bull Junior program here in a second. But Helmut Marko basically said that he was expecting DeVries to be equal to Tsunoda, but, quote, he was always 0.3 seconds slower, and the team saw no improvement in DeVries. Marko then went on to give a pretty harsh take. You know, people are arguing, yeah, but he's a rookie. Marko said, and I quote, he is 28 years old, has a lot of experience, and has also been able to gain a lot of knowledge as a test driver in various Formula One cars. You can't compare him to a young rookie in my eyes. We had to do something. Why should we wait? And what did 2 more races matter if you don't see any improvement? Nick is a very pleasant guy, but the speed just wasn't there.
Oh, he could have just left that last sentence off. Nick is a very pleasant guy, but he sucks, is basically what Helmut Marko said.
Yeah, I actually kind of appreciate the frankness of Marco's kind of statement here. He just kind of laid it all on the table for everyone and just gave their reasoning why. They're pretty human reasoning, I think. And, you know, it's crazy because before doing all this math, I thought that Nick didn't deserve to be let go like that. I was honestly questioning AlphaTauri's judgment. I was saying they did him dirty. But after compiling all the data and looking at the results myself, I now realize that I was completely and hilariously wrong. You know what? It was actually, it was nice to do that. It was nice to kind of look at the numbers and do all this and realize that sometimes in this sport, decisions get made that are so out of left field and you just feel like who the heck's at the wheel and stuff. But then when you actually drill down and look at it, you're like, oh, no, they get it. They know what they're doing. These guys know what they're doing. They are professionals. And I'm assuming that they probably, that I would imagine that Red Bull and every other team probably has their own kind of performance matrix that they use throughout the year like this. There's probably statisticians on all these teams that do all this kind of stuff all the time. And I am actually really, I want to learn more about that. I want to do more statistics stuff. But anyway, with this conclusion, the numbers don't tell the whole story.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
I would just want to take a side moment here about one of my longtime gripes that I've had with the Red Bull program, which was when Jean-Éric Vergne was let go, which I think if you listen to the show, that is why I have a grudge against Max Verstappen. I think that set my tone for how I was expecting this to turn out, because essentially what happened, Jean-Éric Vergne and Daniel Ricciardo were teammates. Jean-Éric Vergne regularly outperformed Daniel Ricciardo at Toro Rosso. Daniel Ricciardo was promoted to Red Bull and Jean-Éric Vergne was completely fired from the team. That happened in that weird transition period where Sebastian Vettel left Red Bull to go to Ferrari. Suddenly there were two open seats at Red Bull and Jean-Éric Vergne should have been one of those seats. But because Marco had already told him he was fired and wouldn't go back on that and say, actually, maybe it's bad to promote one of these rookies that I have here sitting in Toro Rosso this year, he promoted Max Verstappen instead. So I was looking at this from that perspective of thinking, you know, I've seen a driver done dirty. I've seen kind of like the way that these perceptions of people within the team might overshadow what the numbers say. But in this case, I think I was quite surprised by how damning they were for Nyck de Vries.
Here's a question. We have established that we, given the numbers, the Red Bull decision makes sense. But would you have made the decision? Would you have swapped him for Daniel or let him stay the whole season?
This is a good question because I think the whole purpose of Red Bull having Daniel as a reserve driver was for an instance like this. I don't necessarily know if they were expecting it to be DeVries. I honestly feel like they were probably looking at Checo and Tsunoda as their, you know, we need someone who might need to be replaced midseason. I'm a nice person, and this is why I'm not a Formula One team personnel. I would have given Nick the benefit of the doubt and let him try to figure that out. But also, I guess when you look at how distinct the two have been between him and Tsunoda, it's kind of surprising.
I'm a pretty non-confrontational person, so I think no.
See, I'm a pretty confrontational person, but also I feel like I would have given Nick the rest of the season and then probably put Daniel in. Because from not only a performance perspective, but from a branding perspective and a fan base perspective, it just makes more sense to have Daniel in the car. Like, it just does, especially given the fact that Nick is not a child. Like, if you're developing talent, maybe, but this dude is my age, you know?
Yeah.
Despite his absence from the grid this season, Daniel Ricciardo is still one of the most recognizable and beloved drivers in the sport. Replacing DeVries with a driver who had a devoted fan base like Daniel was a no-brainer for Red Bull. Since the announcement, AlphaTauri's social media has basically become the Danny Ric show. But it goes even deeper still. DeVries' performance was potentially costing AlphaTauri millions in missed out prize money, and now with Daniel back in the picture, struggling Red Bull number two driver Sergio Perez, he has to be feeling even more pressure than he was before. According to the Nick formula, the Nolan formula, whatever you want to call it, Checo is trailing Max by 34 performance rating points. DeVries was down by 32.
Yeah. So,
whew.
It's not looking good.
I've got a theory to pitch here.
Okay.
This is all preparation for what I believe will be happening next season, which is Checo will be fired. They will promote Daniel Ricciardo after they have proven that maybe he still has some driving talent. We've got, once again, Daniel Ricciardo, Max Verstappen in Red Bull. And they promote another junior up. I can't remember the name of the fella they've got sitting in the wings right now.
Interesting. You don't think they would demote Checo. You think they would fire him entirely?
Liam Lawson. I believe they're going to put Liam Lawson alongside Yuki Tsunoda in the AlphaTauri. And I'm going to tell you why. I think that perhaps there was a little bit of non-allegiance to the non-Red Bull juniors. Because as you have perhaps seen in the past few years, people like Checo who are coming in from outside of the program get a little bit shafted. They don't have that investment and they don't have that like urgency on Red Bull's part to continue to keep them there. DeVries, obviously, he was part of the McLaren Young Driver program and was intimately tied to Mercedes. I don't think they had the allegiance to him and they took a chance on him over perhaps a slightly better, more talented, more deserving, but certainly a lot younger and more malleable driver in Liam Lawson. Mm-hmm.
They want someone that can be codependent with their boss, mm-hmm. You know?
They do. Mm-hmm.
Someone out in the middle of the lake.
They do. And we're seeing some weird stuff with Max Verstappen and Checo. I mean, in the past couple of years alone, we've seen these weird entire family battles between the two of them with like weird allegations on Instagram and stuff like that. It's odd. It's bizarre.
To sum this all up, Tony Aliuzzi, Toro Rosso's first driver, said it best when he was eventually let go from the team in 2007. I quote, "I thought that only on-track performance counted, but in this business, it's not the case. You have to have marketing, politics, and speed. It's a package, and I was not the full package, I think."
I think that's what it is. You know, Danny Ric just makes sense. Just makes sense. It's time for Boyfriend of the Week this week, but we're going to do things a little differently today. From all of us at Donut Racing Show, I didn't even clear this with my co-host. I'm just doing it. From all of us at Donut Racing Show, I think it's appropriate. Nick DeVries, you are our Boyfriend of the Week this week.
Yeah.
We hope that this week you're in a good headspace, looking towards the future. You're a really talented driver, dude. I think that this, even though numbers say one thing, I also think that there's a lot of other factors going into how it worked out. And I think we'll probably see you back on a grid somewhere soon. Because, yeah, keep going, man. You're good.
Go, Nick.
I bet he's going to have a wonderful career, actually, in endurance racing.
I hope so. He'll be all right.
Thank you for listening to the Donut Racing Show. We will be back next week to talk about the Hungarian Grand Prix, and I will be recording from a whole other country.
Whoa.
Where are you going?
London.
Oh.
I'm going for Formula E. A little housekeeping. You may have noticed we did not do a track walk about Hungary, but if you want to head back to season one of our show, we've already done one. We only have two new track walks left this season for Qatar and Vegas, and then we are killing the segment. We are taking it out back. It's Ouch. Over. It's done. It's Jover.
Oh. In the meantime, make sure to subscribe and tell all of your friends to tune in to the Donut Racing Show. If you want to leave us a 5-star and kindly worded review, it really helps us out. We also have an email address for you to get in touch, which I will give you in just a second. But first, I'm going to read you an email we got recently.
Oh boy.
Hello, I just had this same conversation with a friend in an airport. In parentheses, the conversation that they were referring to is when I asked last week if Nolan thought he could land a commercial airliner in an emergency, because the prevailing theory is that men think they can do this. Back to the email. I, an average guy, am equally convinced as Nolan that I could land a plane if I could get access to the cockpit. Apparently, the autopilot features of modern airliners are so good that basically all I'd need to do is hit the brakes when the plane is on the ground, and I believe the good folks in the tower and their ability to teach. I think anyone who doesn't think they could land a modern airliner should believe in themselves more. Damn.
I'm obsessed.
Thanks for the great podcast, book, and assorted articles, videos, etc. It's so nice to have such a fun crew to listen to at the end of the race week. Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
We do this for you, dude. Get access to that cockpit. Land that plane, buddy. We're going to do it. We'll do it. there's probably a package that we could pay extra for to let us land a plane.
No, don't. I don't want that.
It's part of the Diamond Ultimate Rewards Delta program, I think. Okay. Again, thank you so much for the email. DonutRacingShow@DonutMedia.com. That's the email address right there. We also got an email, I think, from a flight instructor up in Sacramento or the Bay Area who said I could come try to land a Cessna 172.
He also said me and Elizabeth were invited. We're all invited.
My blood ran cold when I read that. I don't want to try that. Small planes are crazy, dude. Anyway, all right. So if you're not familiar with Donut, we have a YouTube channel as well as an automotive history show called Past Gas, number one automotive podcast in the world. Check it out. Follow DRS on all social media at Donut Racing Show and email us at DonutRacingShow@DonutMedia.com. Follow Alanis at Alanis N. King on Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky, I think.
And threads. Everywhere, just in general.
Yeah. Follow Liz at Eliz_Blackstock on Twitter and Eliza Blackstock on Instagram and Threads. And you can follow me at Nolan J. Sykes on all social media. Math is cool now. I'm going to learn more math.
And as an aside, if you want to look at Nolan's spreadsheet, we are going to post it on our Twitter account.
Oh, sweet.
So if you are listening to this episode and you're like, I want to see the numbers, go to Donut Racing Show on Twitter. We'll give you a screenshot. You can look at it. You can see Nolan's hard work.
Oh, there's some other takeaways. Sorry. There's one. I found some other things. I compared Zhou Guanyu and Valtteri Bottas in his rookie season, and Bottas just like wiped the floor with Joe. But I mean, that's not surprising because Valtteri's has been in it for so long. Like, it's weird. Like, this is just like the takeaways are kind of like obvious, but at the same time, seeing the proof of it mathematically, like, makes it more interesting. I don't know. Anyway,
nice.
Thank you so much for listening. Math is cool. Bye.
Bye.
The end.
Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.